Welcome to episode 3 of Tailoring Tech and Talk with me, Roberto Revilla. I'm a bespoke tailor, menswear designer and owner of Roberto Revilla London Suit and Shirt Makers. This podcast is for anyone interested in clothing, personal image and business, but we'll also throw in a bit of technology and lifestyle talk from time to time since I'm passionate about all things to do with great design. I'll also be talking to a different guest each episode, including our customers, who are from a vast range of different business backgrounds, our suppliers in fabrics and accessories, and owners of some of my favourite brands. My hope is that you'll learn something new, meet some interesting people, and be inspired to get involved either by commenting on each episode or even joining me as a guest. This week, it's a tale of two tailors as I'm joined by Paul Brown of A Wolf in Wool. We'll be discussing the state of the suit, guidelines on how to build a smart casual wardrobe, as well as some predictions as to how we might dress for work as we emerge from lockdown and return to the office. Enjoy! I'm joined today by Paul Brown of A Wolf in Wool, tailors based in Galway in Ireland, just in case anybody didn't know where Galway was. Paul, how are you?
Bobby, thanks a million for having me. I am pumped. It is a dry day on the west coast of Ireland. So there's one thing this pandemic's taught me. It is, to count your blessings, and it's dry in Galway. So we've started off well. We've started things well. Thanks for having me. And look, excited to be on the podcast. And I think, I enjoy the format and everything. So yeah, delighted to be here.
Great stuff. With your permission, I'm just going to let everybody listening know how you and I came to know each other, if that's okay.
Absolutely, please.
Brill. So we came up with this unconstructed jacket that was meant to be a hybrid between a jacket and a sweater. And it had been quite a successful product. But the way that I used to describe it to people was a blazer meets a sweater, hit it off, and they end up doing it. And they have a child. And the child is this jacket sweater hybrid thing. So a lot of my clients would just look at me really strangely, but it was the only thing off the cuff that I could think of to describe this product. So on Instagram, I put a shout out to our followers to ask them to come up with names for this thing. We put a prize up. Paul came up with the very catchy Patrick Swayzer.
You know, well, apart from an ode to the great man and, his various artworks, etc., and career to date, the problem with menswear is it can get very serious, and particularly tailoring. And there's kind of connotations that it has to be very prim and proper, etc. Whereas, in reality, it's just clothes. And particularly with that garment, which is a hybrid between two, it should be fun. And the Swayzer, which is a sweater meets a blazer. Just every time I heard it, it's like an earworm, one of them songs, a catchy song. It just, I can't help but see it on your Instagram and think, there's the Patrick Swayzer.
Yeah, no. And when I got your message with that, I was like, that's it. He's just hit the nail on the head. It was absolutely perfect. And do you know what? It actually really caught on. So our customers now will refer to their Swayzers, which is just absolutely brilliant. So thank you for that. Fantastic. We actually had put a prize up of some gift vouchers, which obviously you don't need because you're in the same business. But what Paul did do is he asked if we could have a meeting together, because Paul started his business a year ago.
Yeah, pretty much, exactly.
Yeah, Paul just asked for some of my time, but then COVID happened and we weren't able to meet up in person. But we have managed to actually meet up in inverted commas online, and I've got you here today, and it's such a privilege. Thank you so much for joining me. It'll be nice to talk to someone who does what I do, because there's a lot going on in clothing at the moment and a lot of conversations to be had. We're going to have a chat about suits, we're going to have a chat about the state of menswear, what people have been wearing, what we think they might be wearing when everybody eventually gets back to work and gets back to attending events and so on. And hopefully it'll be fun and engaging. And if it isn't, then it means that all the hard work I've done for the last two episodes is just going to go in the bin. But I'm sure it's going to be fabulous.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And I can kick things off, with like where it started and my interest in it. And I've always, my first job out of school was a butcher, of all things. Where I picked stuff up was, here's this steak or that steak, and it'd be cooked differently. And all these different things combined to create different meals. Everything's got a different technique. And when I thought about it more, and as I grew up and kind of got into what we're in now, what I realized was I quite enjoy where art meets science. And so, like, in the butchering context, they, you know, you could happily take a beautiful fillet steak, bung it in a microwave for 10 minutes, and suddenly you'll have, like, an edible piece of animal protein, which is fit for its purpose. Like, it's not great, but it is fit for its purpose. That's the science. Like, conversely, you can take that piece of steak, you can bring it up to room temperature, you can season it liberally, you can put it in a hot pan with some butter and some rosemary, some garlic, rest it, and 10 minutes later, you have the same outcome. You have an edible piece of animal protein, but you've got an entirely different outcome. And that's where the art comes in. You know, the science is getting there and the art comes in terms of the production. It's my view, you know, that menswear and tailoring is kind of the same thing. Like, anyone can go into a shop and pick up a ready-to-wear suit for whatever your budget is, whatever fabric you want. And it's kind of, it's fit for its purpose. It's clothing ultimately and kind of keeps you warm and presents you for that interview or sales pitch or what have you. But in reality, like, when you think about it, when you bring a bit of art into it and you think about fabric and you think about fit, you think about construction, that's where the passion lies. Flannels for winter or tweed sports coats and wool, linen and silk mixes for summer. And if you scratch the surface, there is so much more to it than just going in, lifting the first suit you see and walking out. And even to that point, like, you walk into a suit store and there's just like a myriad of blues without, you know, thinking too much about it. You can just, again, lift the first one off the rack. But in reality, if you think about your complexion or you think about the formality of the events you're going to wear to it, there's a difference, you know, there's levels to this. And like, the perfectly put together guys or the guys that are really well put together have considered it. And like, what we're trying to do is like, just advocate, like, considered tailoring or considered menswear, not, we don't all have to be rocking, you know, I'm not saying wear a black tie to your brunch on a Sunday. I'm just saying, with a bit of consideration, I think menswear can be fascinating and it can really, you know, it really enhance the individual with a bit of consideration. That's where we're going and that's where we want to be, I think.
Yeah, I've been inspired of late. I mean, speaking of dinner suits to brunch, there was this thing, I don't know if it happened over where you are, but over here, people were posting pictures of themselves on social media every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever bin night was, basically putting the bins out in a full tux with bow tie. I just found it absolutely hilarious. I mean, it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But it just goes to show that there is this sort of yearning for all the bravado that we've heard over the last 12 months of, you know, I haven't worn a suit since March and I've been wearing t-shirts and shorts and flip-flops and so on. I think there is this general yearning for people to be able to go to their closets again and just pull out all their fine attire, whether it's suits or smart casual jackets, chinos, that sort of thing. We want to get back out there. We want to start getting back to events, getting back in the office, getting back meeting people and doing business again. Attending weddings and christenings and so on. We've just lost so much in the last 12 months. And clothing has been a big part of that.
Yeah, I think you had said in a previous pod that one of your newer clients or at the start of this thing, someone had mentioned that things weren't looking up and, you know, it was the end of smart attire or the suit. And even a lot of the media around that had suggested the same, that going forward, everyone's going to work from home and, you know, it's the death of the suit. And clearly, demand for suits has fallen off a cliff for good reason, where everyone's working from home. But like, I think we've spoken about it before. Like, you know, historically, when you think about these dilemmas and, you know, you can go back to, say, the Wall Street crash of 1928 or the kind of the crisis in the 70s and then what happened in the 80s. And even in 2008 with subprime crisis, I think each of those were preceded by a kind of a boom in menswear. Like, you had the emergence of the dandies in the 30s and, you know, these fabulously attired men like Fred Astaire and Clark Gable. And then, you know, the 80s, probably less said about suits in the 80s, the better, but there was a boom in tailoring and there was a booming in fashion, so to speak. And then similarly, after subprime 2008 and the recession, you had the boom in like the iGen and the hashtag menswear scene and guys wearing dinner suits to take the bins out. There was a newfound appreciation. And obviously this is a crisis and it's an economic one and a global one and a human one. I think the gentleman that said to you that, you know, this is the end of the suits and everything else. Or
I was basically told that I was redundant, that I wasn't needed anymore.
You know, it chose his best.
Well, the exact line was, I guess no one's going to need you anymore.
Lovely, lovely.
I mean, he might as well have just pulled out a 44 Magnum and just shot me straight through the heart, you know? Absolutely killed me.
A lot of people have been saying this with this working from home boom is coming, and there probably will be a shift. But I think to talk about menswear and tailoring and where it's going, firstly, you've got, and this is against a backdrop of, I guess, is like sustainability and everything else. And you know, everyone's, and again, like I mentioned, like considered approach to tailoring. Like, sure, maybe you work in an office 3 days or 4 days and work from home one, but maybe you need just one or two good suits and you don't need to go and lift five from some fast fashion house and look after those pieces. And again, you mentioned it in another podcast. It was fascinating. Like the idea of an investment piece. We live in a world now where fast fashion has become like a byword for fashion in general. Whilst it has its place, people's budgets are budgets. You know, our grandfathers, despite having a whole less lot opportunities than us, were invariably better dressed than us. That was because they had access to local tailors and natural fiber fabrics. What happened to the world was polyester was invented post-war. Polyester ultimately being like a polymer, part of the plastics family. You know, you can make my six-year-old's Frozen dress out of it. You can make a shower curtain out of it. You can make a tire out of it, and you can make a cheap suit out of it. And again, like budget is budget, but polyester occurred in it, and it's ended up in this fast fashion piece, and it kind of went on to dominate the high street. Something got lost along the way, you know, the art of a natural fiber suit and all the benefits it brings, and the art of a local tailor and someone like you, you know, that can offer, and myself that can offer a good service, a personalized service, and, you know, notwithstanding all the customizations and the dream that can come with made-to-measure tailoring. And you can access good access to the three foundations of membership, which is cloth, construction, and cut. And so, you know, from my perspective, or my opinion would be, that it's not the redundancy of like Roberto Rivelli Bespoke or Wolf in Wool. And in actual fact, again, with sustainability and everything, maybe you'll see people come back with a more measured and considered approach to their wardrobes. Yeah, I was speaking to someone the other day, and in the 80s, the microwave came along, or 70s, the microwave came along. It was the savior of the modern family. Like, people were no longer had to slave over a cooker. They could sit down and have their meal in 3 minutes flat. And this was it. This is how cooking and restaurants and the whole cuisine scene was gonna move forward. And then nowadays, 30 years later, 40 years later, it's not the case. It's reversed entirely. And people seek out organic produce or local produce. And there was no nutritional benefit to microwaves. There was a time benefit. Hopefully you would see the same with fast fashion and a return to like tailoring and natural fiber fabrics and construction. You see it elsewhere where people prize construction and materials. Hopefully that's where we get to our post-pandemic, more considered and more thoughtful approaches to wardrobes.
Yeah, well, everything goes in cycles, doesn't it? So to take the food analogy again, so you had TV dinners in the 80s, and obviously right now we've got this revolution in food because restaurants have had to shut. Deliveroo, Uber Eats, all these delivery platforms have now taken over. And you've got restaurants who are setting up these dark kitchens in warehouses. I mean, we've got one nearby in North London in Wembley. It houses very small kitchens. So you'll have Byron Burgers. They'll have a couple team members there. You'll have Chipotle. You'll have Nando's and so on and so forth. You order your food. You think it's coming from the restaurant. It's not coming from the restaurant. More than likely, it's coming from one of these so-called dark kitchens. And the quality is not really lost or anything. It's just another way of getting your food. But that's just something that the pandemic has caused. Similarly, in clothing, what's happened is people can't go and see a tailor anymore, or they can't go to a store to buy ready-made clothing. So what they're doing is they're buying online. What's ending up happening is we're creating another problem in the clothing industry because people are ordering stuff online. So, for example, I visited a client down in Surrey last summer, and he put me in his home office downstairs to wait there so that we were socially distanced while he tried things on. And in the corner, there were boxes and boxes of stuff just piled up. And his wife passed by in the hallway, and I just said to her, I said, "What's all of this?" And she said, "Oh, that's all got to go back to various places." And I said to her, "Oh, wow, I mean, that's just like a mountain of stuff." And she said, "Yeah, it's probably about 2 to 3 months worth." But she says, "When I do get time to go to the post office, the queue's going round the block, so I can't be bothered." And obviously, where you've got a return window, people aren't going to get stuff back. So then what happens is that they end up with a pile of clothes that don't fit them or they didn't like, but they didn't get the chance to return them. So now they're just going to take up space in the wardrobe. And eventually, they might go to charity, or they might just end up in bin bags and end up in landfill. Another problem is being created in terms of waste. You know, I think people are going to be a little bit more amenable to conversations about how they build their wardrobes going forward.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, and those items that are returned to like an online retailer, particularly a fast fashion house, kind of throw away and cheap. But if you spend, I don't know, with $10 on a t-shirt and you return that t-shirt, it's almost not worth that guy. You know, someone's got to unpack that. They've got to probably steam clean it. It's got to be repackaged. It's got to be redistributed. Like by the time you add up all them costs, it's probably not worth that retailer's time or money. Repackage and resell, it will inevitably just end up in landfill or burnt or something. So the beauty of what you and I do, you've got what might come out of this pandemic is a new hybrid of business, because, you know, you think traditional retail models are like a large footfall, massive store, a huge amount of choice and everything else. And, you know, a good digital offering and then kind of customer service is what it is, and to the point where they return garments and they go to landfill. Whereas, you know, what you do is semi-digital. And then similarly, it's got very traditional values. It's got that custom, you know, if a garment's slightly out from your side, you're going to manage that. Hopefully that's where we come back if post-COVID, is that people will appreciate no longer having to go to the post office and return that 15 euro t-shirt or whatever. And they can call you up and you know, they trust your judgment. They, you know, you're not a 15-year-old sales staff doing a weekend job in a West End store. You've been doing this a long time. You know what fits. You know what's on trend. That expertise and that customer service, hopefully, along with a more considered approach to what's in your wardrobe, is kind of where we go. And that's not even touching on maybe people want to get dressed up again. You know, what I see online from, like, there's a big racing festival here in Galway, and a lot of people, they just can't wait to get dressed up and go again. And the wedding scene has taken such a battering, and a bride and groom that would have put so much time and effort into organizing a wedding last year and even this year, and now they're in the case they're doing it again, and I've got friends and family that are in that position, and, you know, my heart goes out to them. And that demand has to go somewhere, and maybe they've got smaller weddings, and maybe people, again, want to take a different approach to it. But again, I have a very different opinion to the gentleman that was wielding the magnum, you know.
Just to take it back a few steps, because I was just thinking about something when you were talking about the 15-year-old in a shop in the West End, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. You know, if you're young...
No, more power to them.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Get out there and work. We love that. I've been working since I was 3 years old. I've never stopped. That's what happens when you're of an Asian ethnicity. They just put you to work. That's what happens. We don't hate retail. The clothing industry, no matter whether you're in tailoring, you're in retail, you're in online, we all need each other. There's space for all of us. What I want to do is maybe get away from what we actually do and maybe just talk about how we actually do it. And maybe that's some of what's been lost in retail, and certainly what's missing when consumers are buying online. What we do as tailors is people come to us, or our customers come to us, or we go to them. We try to help them through the decisions that they're making, so that when they place an order with us, by and large, what we are putting into their wardrobes are things that they're going to use 100% of the time. They're going to know what to do with it. But when consumers are walking into a retail store or they're clicking online in a web browser, they're largely left to their own devices. There's not that much help available. There are retail models where you can be assigned a consultant or an advisor who will take some time over the phone to learn about your likes and dislikes and your preferences and so on and so forth. And they will then make curated recommendations based on what you've told them. But by and large, you don't get anywhere near that on most online sites and in most retailers these days. Most retailers these days, you walk in, you have a browse around, can I help you? No, I'm okay. But then you'll go and get the shop assistant's help when you can't find your size. You know, we do bespoke jeans, but I was talking to a client recently, or more to the point, I was talking to his wife, and she was saying how frustrated she is at the jeans that he wears because he's got, for want of a better definition, a flat seat. And she said, is it worth us looking at your bespoke jeans? And she sort of balked at the price because there's that value proposition and so on. But I said, so we've got two options. Either you can try bespoke jeans, and the proof of the pudding is in the eating, as they say, and that's where you get the real value because they will fit perfectly. What you could try in the interim, you could try going to this very well-known jeans brand, I would try this particular model, get him a 32-32. That should get him by for the time being. Don't know why I'm so good at it, but I seem to know how different fashion brands patterns work, because sometimes I just have to spend some time studying their sizing charts for customers who do text me and say, I'm thinking of buying this. Have you got my measurements? What do you think I should buy? So it's not that, you know, we're trying to monopolize everybody's wardrobes as tailors. That's not the case at all. You know, retail definitely has its place. But so anyway, so going back to the example of my client's wife, so she went and bought what I told her to buy for him. And the next time I spoke to her, I said, hey, how did you get on? She said, you know what? I don't know how you did it. They fitted perfectly. I might need you to come and adjust the length a tiny bit, but otherwise they're the best fitting jeans he's ever had. How the hell did you do it? Now, that's a brand that they've shopped at before. So why did they not know that? Why did it take the guy who makes their suits to advise them as to exactly where they needed to be in that collection? They're not getting that help from the retailers. So I think that's another dimension, another facet that maybe the stores need to look at. Back in the old days, in the 70s, 80s, you know, you had professionals at stores. No matter whether they were the 15, 16-year-old, I mean, I think my mom was probably about 15 when she started working for Jeff Banks. But she was well-versed in his entire collection. So when people wandered in, she was able to actually help them find out their needs and then take them through the collection, educate them on what would work for them and so on, so that when they walked out, they were happy with their purchases and they very rarely went back to return things because it was all great. It was the right solution for them. I kind of have to fend for myself when I go into these stores. And I think if they could learn from what we do in the way that we advise our clients, it would lead to just a much better experience for their customers. It would improve the retail clothing model no end.
The other side of that coin as well, and I feel like I can say this because I'm a male in my 30s, but men are typically, they're not always amazing shoppers, but when they are, when they do typically shop for something, they're quite studious. I don't buy the first phone I see or, you know, the first soundbar I see or what have you. I will know a certain amount about it. You know, I don't rarely buy things on impulse. And the point stands for anything, shoes or hoodie or football boots, etc. Doesn't always extend, you know, particularly, you know, again, I come back to tailoring. I haven't found that necessarily with tailoring. You know, there's folks don't seem to extend the same amount of consideration sometimes, and I think maybe part of that is you've kind of got muscle memory of going to stores and people saying, I don't know, and this one fits, etc. Second of all is the tolerance or the patience for it is like, that'll do. I think people compromise and kind of happy to compromise, or on the online model there's a convenience factor that suits as well, you know.
So a client I was talking to today, who's quite senior at a big property firm, he was saying that from what he can see, people are going to be given a degree of autonomy in the way that they dress for work. So for example, if you've got a day where you're not seeing anybody at all, you've got no meetings, then you might be more inclined to wear smart casual. If you have got meetings and so on, and because what's been lost by a lot of firms is the ability to do new business, and creating a first impression obviously is going to be extremely important, especially when you're dealing with potential customers that you've never met before. The straw poll basically says that the suit still has a place, because when it comes to making that first impression, the suit is still the gold standard. And when I say the suit, what I mean is the fundamental components of a suit, which are a jacket, a pair of trousers, a shirt, possibly a tie. So it could be a suit, it could be a smart blazer and a smartly tailored pair of chinos with polished shoes, a shirt and a tie. The other point that he made was that where people don't necessarily need to wear a suit 5 days a week anymore, what that might lead to people doing is actually making sure that the two or three suits that they do have are really, really good in terms of quality and so on. So they might look to invest more in the fewer suits that they have, where before they might have been spending a lower amount on a higher volume of seats more regularly.
From what we were saying at the top of the conversation, I couldn't agree with that view more. If I was on trial for my life, and maybe if a fast fashion retailer hears this podcast and they hear what I've said about them, maybe that might be the case one day. But if I was on trial for my life and your lawyer rocked up in a hoodie and a pair of sweats or a pair of tracky bees, I wouldn't be filled with confidence.
Exactly. That happened to me recently. You know, we involved in going after someone who misbuilt something, and that's as much as I'm going to say on it. And
Yeah, this is a different podcast.
We really, true crime's real. You know, that's why it's called Tailoring Tech and Talk, right? Because we just get into more than tailoring. We had a really important call with the barrister that was going to be representing us, and he still is, and he is a good guy, and he's very well renowned in his field and for this type of case law and so on. But on that particular call, he looked like Elliot from ET. He had the red hoodie.
He was on a BMX with a basket.
You know, he looked like he might have just come in from his back garden smoking a spliff or something. That was the instant reaction in my mind. On a Zoom call where, you know, we really, really needed some confidence instilled in us, that just left us both feeling really, really worried about how things were going. If he'd even just put a shirt on. And I know this call was at the end of the day. When I think back, it was a late in the day call. I could hear his kids screaming in the background. He was probably already transitioning into... But no, actually, now that I talk about it, it was a pre-book call. It was a set date and time. So it wasn't like it was just an unexpected ad hoc thing. Anyway, going back to presentation, if he'd at least just been wearing a shirt... When you get dressed, you express yourself. And it's not just the way you look, but you're telling people how you feel, your state of mind. And it might not be as blatant as that, but it's all these kind of internal psychological triggers that go off, right? Like they always say that when you meet someone for the first time, it's that first 5 seconds are crucial, because it's the first 5 seconds. They might not be aware of it on a conscious level, but on a deep subconscious level, those first 5 seconds are where... That's your challenge for this week, listeners. Say those first 5 seconds 20 times really, really fast, and whoever can do that without hesitating, pausing, screwing it up, I'll make you a free suit. Huh, there you go. Yeah,
another Patrick Swayze.
But those first 5 seconds, they're subconsciously making up their mind as to whether they want to do business with you. If you get that wrong, it really doesn't matter what happens after that. If you get it wrong at the start, the rest of the meeting is going to be an uphill struggle for you, and you might not even realize it. So, case in point, I had to put on a suit to see a new customer on Wednesday. Socially distanced and safe and all of that. The act of dressing, so anyone can just throw on a pair of jeans and a t-shirt, but to actually get dressed, to think about what you're wearing, to think about your audience, putting on a shirt, doing your cufflinks up and putting your watch on and making sure your shoes are polished. Yeah, it might seem like a chore after 12 months of wearing jeans and a t-shirt or jogging bottoms or whatever, but when you go back out there into the big wide world and you start meeting people again, the way you dress is going to tell them how much you care about things. Am I making sense here?
No, absolutely. And that the 5 seconds thing, there's a terrific book, actually. I don't know the name of the author, but it's called Messengers. And it talks about that and essentially the halo effect. You get one opportunity to make that first impression. And, you know, if you take the instance of a job interview, like it probably takes you 5 seconds from the front door to the desk. How you're presented, that handshake, that smile, your appearance, it is unequivocally important. What you're wearing is essentially 90% of your presentation on the day. Similarly, I don't buy into, oh, you've got to be like shirt and tie and tracksuit bottoms for a Zoom call, say like this one, that doesn't appeal to me. If you're working from home, you're working from home. You're entitled to be as presentable or as comfortable as you can be. Obviously, there's a level of decorum required, but I still don't expect people to be sitting there in a double-breasted blazer for the purposes of a Zoom call. You know, I don't think that's the case. But like, what I would be curious about, you know, to hear you speak about is when you speak about smart casual from your perspective, what do you... You know, you've got a client who's going to buy two jackets, a winter and a summer or a year round or whatever, and maybe a couple of casual pants. You know, what do you think or what screams out to you?
So when I start talking to clients about smart casual, what I explain to them is smart casual is quite complex. So when you go back to the suit, if you need to wear a suit 5 days a week, you have five suits in the wardrobe. You might have a navy, a charcoal, you might have a navy stripe, a couple checks, and one other. It's just easy, right? But when you get into smart casual, it just opens up a whole can of worms. And this is why when you see workplaces go to a smart casual dress code, you'll see some people still wearing suits. They might not be wearing a tie, but they'll still wear a suit because these guys have got enough decisions to make in a day without sitting there in the morning when they get up, scratching their head over what goes with what and what they should be wearing and what's appropriate and what do they need to layer because of the weather outside and so on. Smart casual is a seasonal consideration. So for example, you can't just at this time of year buy two linen jackets and think to yourself, oh, that's my work smart casual, my smart casual wardrobe done for the next 12 months, because it's not. Because when you get to September, October, when the weather turns, if you're walking around in linen jackets, not only are you going to feel a bit cold, but you're going to look a bit stupid as well. Smart casual, you have to break it down into seasonal sections. So, Mr. Customer, what you're going to be buying right now is what you're going to be wearing for the next 3-4 months. And then in a couple months' time, we're going to have to start thinking about next season. And we're going to be looking at different fabrics and different textures. So to try and split it into to broad categories, if you're looking at jackets, you're buying flannels and tweeds from, in this country, from September through to about March. And from April through to around about August, September, you're wearing cottons, linens, lightweight wools. In terms of minimizing your investment and trying to get the maximum number of pieces, what you can do, and very often I have done this for customers, particularly younger customers who don't have as big budgets. For example, for the summer, what you could do is you could have a medium blue linen blend suit, and you could have a cream or tan colored linen blend suit. So you've got jacket, jacket, trouser, trouser. You've got two complete suits. You can cross the jackets over and then you can cross the trousers over. You can use the trousers on their own with just a shirt. You can use the jacket separately with another piece, like with jeans or whatever. And suddenly you've got 5 or 6 or 7 outfits out of just two suits.
I agree. And I think what's the missing piece there, or from like, if somebody doesn't really delve too much into the menswear scene, is there's this concept of like an orphan suit jacket or the suit separate. And it does, you know, when people are like, I'll just buy this navy suit and I'll rock it with a pair of jeans at the weekend. I think the problem with like that wool suit, that wool jacket, and being worn with a pair of jeans, is you're asking something that jacket's not structured to do. Like, it's a formal garment and you're rocking it with a pair of jeans, which is unequivocally an informal garment. There's something lost there, and it does look odd. It's like the Clarkson look. You know, there's something odd about it. There's the shine or the sheen from a worsted wool. There's the little bit of structure in the shoulders. There's a little bit of structure in the chest. And like, guys, the equivalent is like trying to wear, say, like a pair of tracksuit bottoms with a pair of black polished shoes. They're both garments. You can wear whatever you want to wear, but it doesn't look right on the eye. And what's genius about your suggestion with like linen or that kind of non-wool fabric is the texture. The texture means so much. The cloth means so much.
Texture's key. So take shirts as a big example. What happens with a lot of other tailors when I get customers coming to me and they say to me, do you do casual shirts? And I say, what was your previous tailor's definition of a casual shirt? What did they do for you that you really liked? And they'll show me. And basically what their tailor was doing was making exactly the same, they were using exactly the same fabrics, but what they would do is just put a button cuff on a casual shirt and put a double cuff on a formal shirt. But to all intents and purposes, it was the same shirt. But texture is really, really important. So we've got distinct shirt ranges where we have dress shirts, which are broadcloths and Oxfords, poplins and so on. And they are work shirts. But when someone wants a casual shirt, autumn, winter, we have ranges of brushed cottons that have got a little bit more of a flannelly texture to them. They go really, really well with jeans. They work really well with flannel trousers. You can also wear them with a suit, no problem at all, and a dark tie. but to all intents and purposes, they are meant to be casual shirts. For summer, that's when you start breaking into things like linens and linen cotton blends, because the fabric texture gives the shirt just something extra. It marries well with the types of trousers, shorts, whatever it is that your customer is going to be wearing at that time of year. You know, there's nothing worse than, you know, when you go on holiday and you see, sadly, it invariably seems to be Brits that do it most of all, but you're on the beach and you see someone sort of rock up in a pair of shorts, and then they're wearing a shirt with the sleeves rolled up, but you can see that it's a double cuff striped business shirt. It was never intended to be worn in that setting. It was only ever intended to be worn in a formal setting at work. Fabric texture and types of fabrics are very, very important when you're trying to help people to dress for certain situations and certain occasions, or you're trying to help people get new pieces to fit in with existing types of garments. So again, taking the last year as an example, a lot of our shirt sales have been in the strictly casual area. Our formal shirt sales just went through the floor, but then the opposite happened to our casual shirt sales. So last summer we did so much of these Liberty inspired prints and linens and linen blends, and then going into winter, our brushed cotton shirt sales were just through the roof. For anyone listening that's not quite sure what brushed cotton is, you could also call them flannel shirts because it's the same sort of texture.
But just on the flat, like, they're not flannels, like, no connotations of a lumberjack. The flannel is in the beautiful brushed warm material, not the aggressive plaid that might be associated with a grunge band in the 90s from Seattle.
Yeah, so they even can be, you know, a lot of them are actually lightweight, but the texture and the finish, the surface texture of the fabric, just gives them that sort of illusion of having a little bit of body to them. They've got a bit more interest to them. The colours tend to be richer, and, you know, you get deeper burgundies and blues and greys and so on. Very often you get a lot of check patterns in those, and they just marry so well with things like cotton whipcord trousers and most types of smart denim, and that's what a lot of guys sort of miss when they go shopping for shirts and things on their own. And then you bring that back to jackets and trousers, it's the same thing. Fabrics and fabric texture are so important when you're buying and dressing for different seasons and different situations.
And I think that's important to not, like, going back to the versatility or the investment pieces, that flannel shirt, the brushed cotton shirt, even comfortably worn November time with a suit and say a knit tie or a tie with a bit of texture, and gets dressed up. But similarly, you can drop that with wear that at the weekend with a tweed jacket or a flannel jacket and a pair of jeans, and it's that texture, that transition. So there's no need to go out and buy 2-3 shirts. You know, you have a perfect transitional piece, and then you're not like the dude on the beach in Marbella with a double cuff shirt and, you know, 4 buttons open, saying, you know, here I am, nice and relaxed. It's horses for courses. And I think, you know, again, jackets with jeans or dress shirts with chinos, you are asking a garment to do something it's not been designed to do. And that's why, whether you're into tailoring or garments or fashion or style, most people recognize it's off a little bit. And maybe you can't put your finger on why it's off, but it's off for that reason, because you're asking a formal garment to do something inevitably informal. And typically it's like cut cloth, really, that's going to, you know, is going to be the big sway factor in that decision or what hits the eye first. And I think what was interesting, what you said about like cotton whipcords as well, because I was having this conversation with a friend of mine that owns a shop here in Galway last Friday. Most guys know you have wool pants come with the suit pants, let's call them. Most people know what chinos are, and most people know what denim jeans are. But there's also like 2 or 3 in between, which again are like perfect for that smart casual wardrobe. They kind of has been lost either to the sands of time, where people used to wear it once upon a time. I'm thinking specifically about like flannel trousers, and even stuff that has like old man connotations, like corduroy or, moleskins and stuff. Because once you cut them in a modern cut, maybe with some turn ups or a little bit narrower than you would have, say, a pair of cords, like typically quite baggy, shapeless, looks like something grandfather would wear, cut them like nice and narrow, turn ups, suddenly you have, I love it, again, another transitional piece that hits that smart casual piece for your office on a Thursday, Friday in winter. If you're a teacher, you can wear that in school with a shirt. Similarly, you can wear it to dinner on Friday, Saturday night. You can wear it to Sunday lunch. It's you don't have to put all your eggs in the navy worsted soup basket. There's so much out there. And it just comes down to that cloth and cut and that little bit of consideration around it, I think.
Yeah, I think if you get your smart casual pieces right, and this, whether you get them tailored or you get them ready made is, it doesn't make any difference. But if you get them right, they're almost better investment pieces often than suits, because if you're in a smart casual work environment, you're going to use these things every single day. But then you'll transition them out to using them when you're going out for dinner or at the weekends and so on as well. So you're using them, a lot of this stuff, 7 days a week rather than just four or five. That's not to say that suits aren't a great investment, because they of course they are. For me, the suit is still, if I've not already said it, is still the gold standard when it comes to creating the right first impression or creating impact when you need to. We've got neighbours who moved in across the road at the beginning of the pandemic, and obviously our business was completely shut from March 2020 through to early June. So there was no reason for even me to wear a suit. I was just doing other things to keep myself busy, like building work and all that sort of stuff that I won't, again, get onto, because this is not the DIY podcast. But they'd never, ever seen me out of jeans and a sweatshirt or t-shirt. So when we reopened the workroom in June, I obviously put on my best, and I was just getting the Vespa ready, and I heard wolf whistling. So what the hell's going on? My neighbours are all hanging out the windows, that sort of looking at me, and especially the neighbours directly across the road, because they just never seen me in a suit before. So they're whistling away at me. And I was like, oh, hi. And they're like, God, you look absolutely amazing. Wow, you scrub up so well. and I was like, oh, yeah, thanks. This is just like my work outfit. It put a smile on my face. I felt so good about myself for like the rest of the day. Probably couldn't fit my head into my crash helmet when I got on my scooter. But I just kept thinking to myself about that for days and days afterwards, that, wow, what an impression. I mean, when I wear smart casual or just casual stuff, I don't think I do it badly. I'm still pretty coordinated. I'm very, very careful about the colours of things that I put together and making sure that there's some element of my, my trainers that matches some element of my top, and then that the shade of the jeans I'm wearing in between are just right to balance the other two things. But just the impression that I made on these strangers just wearing a suit for them for the first time, and just the reception that that got, I just thought to myself, wow, really, that there is something so special about the suit that we, I think, as tailors take for granted. There's a saying, and I can't remember who it was, and it was Mark Twain possibly, but there's a strange power in clothing. That was a really great example of that saying.
There's no, like, the hoodie's great and all, right? And tracksuit bottoms unequivocally are very comfortable. But, like, there's no other garment on the face of the planet that has been built specifically to accentuate the male form. That's why a suit is so popular. And going back to what I said at the top of our conversation, where this, like, art meets science, again, like, anyone can throw on a suit, but a suit, it, by its construction, is there to broaden the shoulders, to broaden the chest, to pinch the waist, to balance perfectly. And ultimately, that's what you want out of any wardrobe, is a bit of balance and to look your best. But yeah, for sure. Like, you know, again, it goes back to the lawyer that's presenting you when your life's on the line. You want him looking sharp. You know, it's why people get married in suits. I think there's another quote, isn't it, Tom Ford or someone who said that, like, a well-cut suit is to a man, to a woman, that lingerie is to a man. You know, it's the point stands. Like, you will not look better in any other garment bar a well-cut suit, you know?
Yeah, it's funny because I put a suit on yesterday morning and my wife caught me as I was going out the front door, and I've never seen her so happy to see me in 12 months as she did yesterday.
Was that because you were walking out the door, or was that because you're in a suit?
I've walked out the door many times over the last 12 months, but I think it's because I was walking out the door in a suit, and she did say, oh my God, you look so good. And I went out the door just walking on air. But yeah, it just
That's great.
Backs up that Tom Ford quote there beautifully.
Absolutely.
I think the other thing that we've missed, we missed certainly last year that we were looking forward to, was the release of a new Bond movie, because that always does our industry a world of good. I think back to the last few Bond movies and the number of suits I've replicated from those films, particularly for people's weddings. Are you looking forward to the eventual release?
Yeah, I like the I like where they've gone with this kind of the current iteration and stuff like that. And even like Daniel Craig, you know, as you said, like a lot of your clients will say, I want to look like that guy. Like that guy lives in a gym, you know, and is incredibly stylish, like versus say, you know, all the Bonds of my youth, which were a bit more, let's call them soft around the edges, I guess, but no, still, you know, exquisitely tailored. Look, it's amazing, and you would know better than most, how much that informed, you know, like that kind of that tight fitting suit or that super slim suit. And
particularly in Skyfall, if you look there, the scenes where he's being reevaluated before he goes back in the field, the suits are almost cut too tight on him, I think.
I imagine, look, he's a difficult frame to fit, right, because he's so athletic, I guess. There was definitely that trend where it was that super slim cut, and I think people have been so comfortable, I guess, in their clothes, and maybe we're going to transition now, like in terms of trends, like where things might be slightly looser cut. I think from my perspective personally, like I do like a slimmer cut suit, and maybe from my perspective I would probably move towards maybe something with a bit more stretch as opposed to something with a, you know, cut a bit more loosely. And I think maybe that's going to be a trend, and certainly like Bond could have done with a bit more stretch, you know, in Skyfall a few years back when it probably wasn't as much to the fore.
In terms of cut, we might go a bit more sort of Brosnan than Daniel Craig as people reemerge and start getting suits made again for work and so on. Because, again, having spent a year just being in more slightly comfy clothing, they're possibly not going to want to feel like they're getting into a straitjacket when they put their suits on. I mean, that's if they've got any suits that fit them, because apparently first lockdown, on average, people were losing weight. This last winter lockdown, a lot of people have not just put that weight back on, but they've gone beyond. They've actually got fatter. So it'll be interesting.
The COVID stone is real. I can attest personally, the COVID stone is real. I can attribute to all the banana bread that was baked, you know, first time around. And again, as winter came around, there was less 5K runs and less fitness challenges and more just, let's just bite down and bear this and get through this, I guess.
I've managed to keep nice and level. I've managed to maintain it all the way through. But it'll be interesting to see how much alteration work is coming our way. I imagine it's going to be quite a lot. But I think going back to the cut of suits, I think certainly if you look at what the big designers are doing on the virtual runways, they're showing suits that are, well, ridiculous. Like, I mean, you look like an idiot wearing any of it down the street. But when what we do as tailors is we take what the high end of the fashion industry is trying to push, and we sort of boil it down to something that's a little bit more digestible for our customers. And what I'm seeing is that we're going to end up with slightly broader shoulders. Jackets are still going to be waisted, but not quite as tucked in as we've been doing for the last 7, 8, 9, 10 years. Trousers are going to get a little bit more looser cut through the leg. I don't think they're going to go to the point of being sort of baggy, kind of 90s, late 90s kind of style, but they're definitely going to relax off a little bit. People are going to want a balance of looking tailored but being comfortable. That's going to be very, very important.
Yeah, I think a combination of that looser fit and then again all the stretch fabrics that are coming on is probably where we're going to go. And like, it would make sense, right? Like a lot of people spend a lot of time in like athleisure and stuff that's relatively stretchy, and particularly as we kind of ease back out of this, you know, with everything else. So it will be curious where it goes. Like, again, going back to what we were saying at the top, I think the demise of the suit has been greatly exaggerated. I think there will be some understandable changes, whether it's cut or it's cloth, etc.
Yeah. And then we've got weddings to come back as well.
Yeah. The wedding one's really interesting. For instance, in Ireland, there's 22,000 weddings in Ireland every year, and 75% of those weddings last year didn't happen. So they rolled forward. But obviously, there was already 22,000 weddings booked for this year, and there's 22,000 weddings booked for next. So like, there's only X amount of venues, and there's only X amount of bands and everything else that's part of that complex. Like the wedding, and it's the same in the UK, but probably on a greater scale. Like obviously there were marriages last year, but yeah, I would say 75% have all rolled forward. there's just all this demand now, all kind of is plumped into this year. And we've already lost, like we're in March now, we've lost 3 months of this year. Probably going to lose April and May here in Ireland. And so suddenly you're into the back end of the year. Look, it will be curious, you know, from a tailoring perspective and from a demand perspective, but even just from a life perspective, you know, one of the beautiful things about living in Ireland is it's not that big, and there's big families and big weddings. You know, the average wedding here, 300-400 people. If you're anywhere between the age of like 25 and 35 and you're from, you know, a smallish town or a smallish medium town on the west coast of Ireland, you'd feasibly go to 10, 15 weddings a summer. With all this pent up demand, I just don't know, like, is that going to be 30, 40? Like, there's only so many weeks in the year, and so, you know, people are only going to get married Friday and Saturday, really.
I think you'd be surprised. I think the days of the week that people get married is going to start to broaden.
It's got to, or maybe it's an overseas thing. Maybe people start to lean toward destinations. Because again, you have a finite amount of bands. You have a finite amount of venues, really. It's not something I've like researched wholly, but I do know that all those weddings have rolled forward. And I do know it's the same amount of weddings next year, and it's the same amount of weddings the year after. And it's going back to what we were saying, people could have come back from this thing and just have the largest social calendar going. You know, they've all the stuff they've missed, all the birthdays, and all the, you know, if you go racing or if you go to any event, like local event or otherwise.
But even before you get to all of that, restaurants are reopening for restaurants that have outdoor seating are taking bookings from the 12th of April onwards. And, you know, I've got customers who are going to be wearing the new stuff that I made for them last year that they haven't really had the opportunity to wear. A lot of those clothes are going to get their first airings on the 12th of April. Mm-hmm. Like, these places that have got outdoor seating are getting booked up. And that's just people calling their friends or family and saying, let's book a table at that restaurant there and let's get together that night. Monday, 12th of April, we're there. People can't wait. So you imagine there's that much pent up demand for just getting out and having a meal together.
Mm.
You know, how much there's going to be for all these big events that start coming along. And we're already starting to get wedding inquiries again just in the last week. So, you know, from Monday, I've got to get back on top of things properly. We've got this potential wave that's coming and it's going to hit us and we're not going to be able to cope, which is a lovely problem to have. I'm not even moaning about it. It's great. The country is like a Coke bottle that has been shaken to within an inch of its life. And someone's just got to take that bottle cap off.
These vaccines could literally be like the Mentos in their bottles. Do you know what I mean? Like, it could be, people are chomping at the bit to get back to.
It's not even that, vaccines or not. I just think if it wasn't for the vaccines, I mean, Carolina said vaccines or no vaccines, as the weather gets better after a year of these restrictions, people are just going to unlock themselves. So, you know, you look at the last couple of weekends where the weather's been a bit warmer. Yeah. The parks in London have been absolutely heaving. People are ready to start getting back to whatever it is that awaits us in terms of levels of normality. The way that they dress is going to come into that.
Every age group and everything else has suffered, obviously, like whether it's financially or physically or otherwise. We've got two young kids. It's tough to have them cooped up. But, you know, you're 21, 22, 23. These are the best years of your life that you're not in Marbs or you're not in Ibiza or you're not, you know, you've missed two summers of this, almost two summers of this.
If you're older than 21, 22, 23, when time seems to just drip through the hourglass a lot faster than it did when you were younger, I mean, you know, we've just lost that time. We're never going to get that back. I wish I was 20 years younger again, when time just felt like it just went by so damn slowly. It wouldn't seem like such a big deal. So, yeah, I know I don't look old, so.
Fab. Look fab, Rob.
Thanks. So, I think we should probably wrap it up there, right? I mean, there's so much more that we could talk about. You've got a big relaunch of the business in mid-March around St. Patrick's Day. We do have listeners in Ireland. I've been looking at the statistics for the last eight. I mean, we're only actually, as of today, we're only 8 days old, but we're closing in on 200 downloads, which is amazing. Wow. And over 100 subscribers. And we have got some in Ireland. Hello to our Irish listeners. That was a really crap accent.
I don't mess with the accent. Notwithstanding, if there is anyone in Ireland that's slightly confused by my lack of a West of Ireland accent, I did move to the West of Ireland when I was 10. But it's home now. It's home then, it's home now. But that's good. I'm definitely one of them subscribers, Bobby. And I think credit to you for, I know it's a lot of work and stuff, but there's not much out there in this space. And you know, I've enjoyed the two today, and there's been a variety of stuff. You know, everyone's brought something different, and it's good to hear those perspectives, particularly in the absence of the capacity to, like, you know, either network or meet people, or even to hear, like, bump into a random in the pub. That's all gone now. So to hear the ins and outs of or career today of, like, an orthodontist and like how their business operates, and similarly, you know, the sustainability, the bees and the sound engineer the week before, you know, we've lost a lot of that. So I think, you know, tailoring tech and talk, I think it's great. More power to you. It's great.
Thank you so much. And what I was going to ask is, for anyone that is listening out in Ireland that wants to get hold of you, how do they find you?
So we are, as you said, relaunching or officially launching the business on the 15th of March. We are A Wolf and Wool. So it's the website is awolfandwool.com. And we're here in Galway on Ireland's west coast. But we serve the whole of the country. So yeah, look us up, hit us up. That'd be great.
Brilliant. I'd love to have you back on again when things kind of get a bit more normal, just to hear how things are going, and we can have a chat about what's happened, maybe go back over some of the predictions that we've made, see if we were right or just completely off the mark. Everyone's gone back to work this summer in shorts and flip-flops. The degradation of human society as we know. Well, do you know what? Actually, it'd be pretty good when that Bond movie does eventually come out. Maybe we could have a chat about it, do a little bit of a review and talk about the clothes in that film.
Great. Well, thanks for having me today, Bobby. It's been great. It's been great catching up and talking about Taylor, and I love doing it. And yeah, it's rare. My wife's sick of listening to it, so it's great to speak to someone in the business. Fantastic.
Yeah, and now what you're going to do is you're going to be listening to this when it's published. Making her even more sick and forcing her to subscribe as well.
Definitely.
Brilliant. Paul, thank you so much. Thanks for your time. Thanks for sharing some of your insights. And it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks, sir.
Good luck next month. And thanks for your support.
Thanks.
Take care. Well, from butchery to tailoring. Thank you to Paul for such a great chat this week. I absolutely loved his energy and enthusiasm, and I hope you did too. That's it for another week. Please do leave us a review. I love to hear your questions, comments, feedback and ideas, so don't be a stranger. If you're enjoying this podcast, please do share us with your friends and family. If you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just send me a DM on social or email me via the website. Our web address is www.robertorevilla.london. You can find me on Instagram at Roberto Revilla London. And you can also find me on Twitter at It's Bobby Revilla. Once more, thank you so much for listening and for your amazing support. I can't wait for you to join me on the next one.